In the desert oasis where stories ignite, Skip's little bar, a beacon of light. From the Coachella Valley stars to cool everyday Joes, join Patrick and Randy, let the stories flow. At Big Conversations Little Bar, the magic spreads near and far. Backed by the McCallum Theater's grace, celebrate the voices that shape this place.
From the coveted corner booth in a little bar at the center of the Coachella Valley universe, welcome to another Big Conversation with Patrick Evans and Randy Florence, presented by the McCallum Theater. Visit McCallumTheater.org or reach the box office at 760-340-2787. Gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Howard. We are here at the coveted corner booth right here at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California for another edition of Big Conversations Little Bar. My name is Patrick Evans, and I'm here along with my trusty co-host, dear friend, and the greatest sidekick since Fester on Gunsmoke.
Festus.
Festus. Yeah, that's right. Uncle Fester was Uncle on the Fester. Adams Family.
And you don't look anything. I don't think we want to be talking about Uncle Fester.
Is that a bald shot? Are you taking
a
shot?
No, no.
Okay, all right.
Put a light bulb in your mouth. Turn it on.
I save that only for weekends. You know that. It's just for me and the
Call
bride.
Me 61.
Randy, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
We are delighted to be here. You know, we need to pause and say a big thank you to our presenting sponsor, the McCallum Theater.
I'm pausing.
Oh. No, you're supposed to say something nice.
Oh, I love the McCallum Theater. And it's not just because they're a presenting sponsor. It's the best performing arts theater that I've ever been to.
And you were actually an usher there for how many years? Many years.
One.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the note asking me to come back.
It worked out well for them and you, apparently.
I haven't been asked back since the famous Charo episode.
What happened? What did you do to Charo?
Never mind.
No, we need to know.
Coochie coo.
Oh, my goodness. Dear heavens. The McCallumTheater.org, where you can find your tickets and all the latest information. They're about to announce another stunning season, so keep your eyes on that. And we are here today with my dear friend, Carol Stevens-Smith. Carol, how are you, dear?
I'm very well, thank
Welcome
you very
back.
Much. Thank you.
Welcome so good back. To have you back on the show.
So glad to be here, part two.
We're delighted you're here. Now, many of you will recognize Carol's name if you read the paper in the philanthropic section.
The Desert Scene.
The Desert Scene.
In the Desert Sun. We might want to mention
it's
the name
desert.
Of the paper.
Do I have to?
Yes.
It's a Desert Scene and Giving section.
You all would know it as USA Today in the Desert. It is published by Gannett out of Phoenix, Arizona. It's our local paper.
And the Phoenix Gazette.
We've had a few people who are affiliated with the Desert Sun. Mm-hmm.
And they love this so much when we talk like this
yeah.
about
yeah,
the
yeah,
paper.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. But you've been writing for, how long have you been writing for the Desert
Sun? It's my 13th year. Yep.
How did you get into doing that? Because, first of all, you do it for free. It's a pro bono.
Pro bono.
You get to go
paid.
To the event.
I get to eat for free. That's the most important part.
Well, thank goodness.
Cuts
you're not
down
expecting
on the grocery
any,
bills, you know?
You're not expecting anything big for being no, here on the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, this is also pro bono work.
Not even
how's
French
that water?
Fries over there.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I call Carol my event wife because she covers so many of the events that I'm emceeing or I have to be at that we overlap. I'd say 80% of the things you write about, I'm at. So.
And I photograph you because, you know, you trip me up as I pass you and it works.
I also give her $20. Here, get a picture of me.
But I also heard that the first time she saw you at an event, you ignored her.
True. That's
you
so
heard
true.
That because she already told this
she
story.
She already told that story.
All right. It was at the Art Museum.
Yes. I know, and I can't remember what it, oh, I do. I think
do you
it
remember?
Was. Yes, I do. It was Loma Linda Guild.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Years and years ago. Yeah.
Right.
I think that too. And I was like, well, he's not a very friendly person. You know? Maybe shy. I thought about that for a minute.
I'm both of those things. I'm not very friendly, and I am shy.
But as I got to know him better, and he's on the podium doing his thing, I know his cell phone number, and I was texting him, and he's talking to the audience, and he's trying not to laugh, and it's like...
I had to text her to stop. Now, we got to know one another pretty well. And if I wasn't... Oftentimes, I'm like off in a corner kind of looking at my notes and preparing for what I'm supposed to do.
Drinking.
Also that...
Yeah. Because that's what you're supposed to do.
Well, everybody has a vocation and an avocation, and drinking is my avocation.
Complimentary cocktail hours.
Complimentary cocktails.
Which is one of the requirements for me to accept your MC gig.
That's why we started doing a podcast at a bar.
It's absolutely good. And look, I don't go to weddings unless there's an open bar. I'm like, forget about it. Like, I'm happy for you two, but if you're not going to buy me a drink... We're not driving to Scottsdale. That's the story.
But that was the first of many.
That was the first of many, many. Yeah. Gosh, I mean, like 8 or 9 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, I know. It was a long time ago.
But tell us how you got into writing. And I did not realize this.
But I started in Scotland.
In Scotland.
I was born in Edinburgh. And my mom used to have a, my mummy used to have a magazine delivered called The People's Friend. It was a woman's magazine. And I used to cut a section of it out every week. And I'd write something, a story, and I'd scotch tape it in there and tell her that I had written it. And, of course, she pretended to believe me, you know. And
aww,
I was going to be a novelist one day. That hasn't happened yet. But I did that. And then my 20s, I ran away to London because I had heard the streets were paved with gold. And I got a job.
And were they?
No. I ended up in the YWCA.
I really did.
I slept in the YWCA.
And you had a baby.
And I had a baby. Took my baby with me. Her name is Denise. She's still here in the desert. She's no longer a baby. She has a few of her own. And I ran away. And I got a job. How I got it, I don't know. But I wrote for the London Evening Echo. And they assigned me to go and interview American stars like the Everly Brothers and some British ones too, like Jerry and the Pacemakers. And
was that a big deal to you at the time? Did you know who these people were?
And Needles and Pinza, The Searchers, and You'll Never Walk Alone, Jerry and the Pacemakers. Jerry was best man at my first wedding.
Tell us that story. How did that come to be?
He was related to the guy I married, you know, when I was 17.
Oh, they weren't just friends. He was a relation.
He was related to, And then I did meet the Beatles. I did meet the Beatles, but when they were very young, they came to Southend-on-Sea, which was, they used to have, you know, like the McCallum is now, but not tasteful. And
McCallum without all the class and taste.
Yes. And so I actually got to meet them, and they were really lovely. They were really nice, you know, and got a lot of memories. Del Shannon.
Did you tell them to get a haircut? Because they needed a haircut.
They really did need a haircut. And their suits were too... Their trousers were always too tight.
Too tight.
Yeah, but which was great. I was 17. and then...
So I did not know that you had been writing, and especially like doing celebrity interviews and that sort of thing. I didn't know you'd been doing
that
for your whole life.
I did that, yeah. But there was a big gap. Yeah, it was a huge big gap because I had to earn some money and pay bills. Yeah.
Because the streets weren't lined with gold.
And then, I got into the bar business, funnily enough.
What?
I was in the bar business for years and years and years.
Is that when you first met Patrick?
Randy, you're perpetuating a myth.
I was in England.
You act like all I do is drink, and I am trying desperately to get Chloe to bring me another beer. But that...
In England, I worked for... I got married for the second time, and we...
Was he also related to Jerry and the Pacemakers?
No, he was related to sitting on his butt watching TV.
My wife has a husband like that.
He sounds familiar. That guy, I know
but
that guy.
For 7 years, we worked for Bass Charrington's, and we were, troubleshooters. We'd go from pub to pub and take pubs that weren't doing well and turn them around and get them working, and then they'd move us on to the next one. So we did that for 7 years.
That's a big deal there.
Yeah, and we ended up in Reading in Berkshire, which is near Windsor, and that was the last one. That was in 1981. And
that was the last...
The last pub that we did there. And then I decided that we would go on vacation to America and emigrate. With just get on a plane and go. Pack your suitcase and off we went.
Landed with no intention of coming back.
You got it.
Yeah.
Yep. And so I came.
What year was that?
1981, March the 10th.
What?
I've got a good memory for that.
247.
Why? What made you just... I mean, it sounded like not a bad life in the UK. I mean, that...
It was hard work. I mean, you had to drink in the bars. Being a publican.
That sounds terrible.
You had to drink. And, I mean, I got to the stage where I would... We lived above the pub. You know, the pubs in the UK, you live above. And I would... be in my bath in a bathtub, and I'd knock on the floor and ask for like a double white Russian, and the staff would bring it to me. I mean, that was my life.
And I'm still waiting to hear the bad part.
Well, I was just going to say, it sounds like you need to move.
I know,
you can't keep that up. You know, the smoking, the drinking, and you got two kids. You
well,
know?
I would have quit smoking immediately.
And you had two kids
I had
at
two
that
kids
point.
By wow, yeah. Two little girls.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's tough. It is hard work because...
It was hard work, yeah. And so I decided...
Every night. And
I decided that we would come to America for vacation. The ex was not happy about that. He was not... But anyway, I bought the tickets. And we came...
And hence, he's now called the ex.
Yes, he's now the ex. We still talk.
So did he come? He came with
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and we brought one daughter, and the other one stayed home with her grandparents for a while till we got settled in Palm Springs.
This was the
how
first
did you
place
pick,
you came.
How did you pick Palm Springs?
We didn't. It picked us. We were driving from Los Angeles, and we heard that there were so many golf courses in Palm Springs, and my ex loved to play golf. We didn't know they were behind gates and you couldn't get in.
They don't tell you that in the brochure.
No, no. And we had met this other couple. Then we started traveling with them. We just kind of met them on the plane and in the hotel when we first arrived. And he was like, oh, I can get you into anywhere in Palm Springs. And my ex-husband was like, this is great. So that wasn't true. So we ended up at the Stardust Hotel, which is down on the corner opposite Lyons, upstairs there. And we lived there. And I went job hunting.
Wow.
And got a job at Lyons English Grill.
Which was a perfect place for you.
Yes. Well, actually, that's
But
funny.
I thought you were trying to get out. Well, it was a restaurant, not just a pub, but I thought you were trying to get out of the...
Well, I heard you could get good money with tips because there was no tipping in England.
Oh, that's right.
So, you know, there I met some interesting people. You want me to tell you about them?
Yes, please. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So this was in the early 80s.
This was in 1981, 82. And that was also when I went to work for Ronald Reagan and the ambassador. Yeah, I did two jobs.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
We're going to jump into that, but I want to hear a little bit about this Lyons business.
Okay, so Lyons English Grill at that time was really kind of a famous in spot for people.
Yeah.
And they had at the lounge bar, there was tables 1 through 8. So it was a young man called Joel Schumacher, a young producer, director, used to come and sit in the corner booth number one every night, late on a Friday night, came late, and nobody wanted to serve him. He's late, and he wanted to go, but I stayed, and because I liked the money. And he was friends with Arthur Lyons, now deceased, who wrote the book, who became a movie called Castles Burning, and he brought... The guy that was going to star in it, I forget his first name, but he brought his little sister, who was Julia Roberts.
Wow.
Oh.
And that's where Julia...
Oh, Eric Roberts.
Eric Roberts. And
yes.
Brought his little sister, Julia, and that's where they met that night in Lyons English Grill. Liber Archie used to come in with his mother and his brother, till his brother George passed away.
Oh.
Jack Lemmon used to come in with his wife, Letitia, until we had to... pour Letitia into a cab out the back door because she kept passing out in the bathroom, drunk. And he was so sweet and so nice. And I met a lot of people there. It was great. It was a good few years. Good
and
money.
Joel Schumacher went on to, he directed one of the worst of the Batman movies.
Oh, he did?
Oh, that's right. I knew the name was familiar.
Yeah, he killed the franchise.
Uh-huh. Well, he lives here, you know.
Does he?
Yes, he does.
Well,
yeah.
No longer getting on the podcast.
Ignore my remarks about you killing a franchise. We would love to have you on the podcast.
I always loved Joel.
I would
Joel's
love Joel.
My number
Actually,
one get.
Here's your opportunity to come and defend that installment of the Batman saga.
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be funny if he walked in a couple of minutes? I'm just listening to you guys.
I heard you guys.
Yeah, he's here.
Well, he didn't kill him. I mean, and Batman's made it back, so it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. When you got to Palm Springs, did you know that all of these celebrities were living here?
I didn't know anything.
No.
I was so naive. In fact, I got a job selling timeshare, but I didn't know what it was. And I only ever had one sale, and they rescinded. I knew nothing. And then I was asked if I would... Well, again, I wrote for The Desert Woman. And you were asking about the writing.
Yeah.
The Desert Woman. And they asked me to write some stories about British food. And so I said, sure. So I wrote about cockaliki soup.
Cockaliki soup. What goes into cockaliki soup?
You know, it's leeks, and I don't remember, but I'm not going to go on the other word.
It's leeks.
And it's like a vegetable soup. And then there was faggots and peas, which you would call meatballs.
Okay.
But they're still on the menu. And then there was spotted dick.
Which is a dessert.
A dessert with sponge with raisins.
Well, it's not an STD.
Yeah, and then we're toad in the hole.
Toad in the hole, which is how you get spotted dick, by the way.
It took me a year and a half to get rid of spotted dick.
By the way, I still have that magazine, the last paper before I got fired. Because I refused. Her name was Shirley, the lady who was in charge of that. And Kate Porter, who's still around, mm-hmm. She was a photographer. There. And I was told, could I please tone down my language? And I said, that's on the menu everywhere in the UK. You asked me to write about Scottish food. And they said, well, darling, if you don't tone it down a little bit, we can't use your stories anymore. And so I was fired.
And screw that.
Well, this is, those people are culturally bereft.
That's right. And probably not
actually,
around anymore.
To be quite honestly, I don't think I could write that story and get away with it today even either. When you think about it.
Probably no. These days it would be, I think.
Yeah. Maybe I could put it on Willie's menu at 8:49. Scottish. Or June at Jillian's because she's Scottish.
That's right. June is, right. She is Scottish. Yeah. So you were writing about, what other, there are interesting names in English food, but you were native of Scotland.
I'm Scotland, haggis.
Haggis, I have had.
I love haggis.
Do you really?
Yeah, really? Yeah.
I really enjoy it.
Do you pour scotch on it?
No.
Oh, that's what
it's haggis, leeps, and tatties, which is turnips and potatoes. So you have the haggis as your base, and then you have your neeps, which is your mashed turnips, and then mashed potato, and you put it all on top of each other. It's really delicious.
You know, you can eat something without pouring scotch on it.
Not haggis. I'm just telling you.
Blood pudding.
The guy that used to own Dirty Nelly's Pub, he brought in haggis.
I've had it.
Have you had it?
Yeah. It made me want to drink scotch.
See?
And I don't like scotch.
No, it was like this little packet of haggis. And then you cut it open, and he did this. He had the little, like, airline bottles of scotch, and you poured it on, and that's how we didn't have the turnips and potatoes.
Yeah, that's traditional.
Oh.
Yeah, and then there's black pudding, which is blood sausage. I also love that. And then there's mutton pies, and, just really good, thick, hearty soups and
good,
stews.
Stick to your bones.
None of this is making me hungry. Well, let's get away from haggis
so
and talk
many
about
spotted dick
these,
jokes we can make, but we're not.
We only have an hour,
but we're not.
I had absolutely no idea I was going to go into that. So I was working at Lions in Grishkill.
But you
and
had another job that took you to the vaunted grounds of Sunnylands.
Yes, I did, for 3 years.
So tell us, first of all, how you got that gig and what you were doing.
At Sunnylands back in the day when the Ambassador Annenberg, when they lived there in the heyday, there was three levels. There was the people that sat down and ate dinner. There was the people that served the people that ate dinner. And there's the people that served the people that served the people that ate dinner. I was in the middle one. I was asked by somebody through Lions English School if I'd like to work a party. And I had no idea what it was, and it turned out to be the New Year's Eve ball for President Reagan. Wow. Which I think I showed you some of that stuff.
You did.
Uh-huh. And Lions English Girl wouldn't let me off that night because that was the busiest night, and I had been, I'm sorry, let me go back. I worked for 5 days before that because President Reagan and Nancy Reagan, they would come in and stay there. And with all their staff and everything. And it all led up to this final night. So I was there every day, working. And then the chief of the White House staff, Colonel Schmidt, was there. And her father was her doctor. He traveled everywhere with her because Nancy Reagan had a I don't know what you call them, like little wart things all over her back. And we used to take them off every day for her because he grew so fast. I mean, you saw her back was smooth, those lovely little red dresses she used to wear. And they were really nice people, really nice. So I wasn't allowed, or supposedly not allowed, to get off. And finally, Dorothy Lyons, who was a lovely lady, she said she would let me off to go to that. I wanted to go so badly to that ball. And they took me in the grounds in the back of a Cadillac, in the trunk of a Cadillac. They smuggled me in the trunk of a Cadillac.
Wow.
And then,
you know, most people who get into the trunk of a Cadillac don't get out.
Yeah. I was really lucky.
Patrick drives a Cadillac,
well,
by
you'd
the
think,
way.
You'd think how naive I was back then. I was right off the boat. I'd only been there 9 months. And there was like five presidents and ex-presidents of the United States in that room at that time.
But and more importantly, Frank Sinatra.
Frank and Barbara Sinatra were there.
Presidents come and presidents go, but there's only one Frank Sinatra.
He wasn't a good boy that night. That's why he did not get invited to the Queen's party that I told you about
one
day.
All right, so what did Frank do?
Well, he just was a little loud, and he made it quite known that he was bored, you know, with the company and the table that he was at.
Don't you have anybody famous I can talk to?
He was bored, and everybody smoked then, you know, so he continued to sit with his legs crossed and smoked, and can we go now, you know, loudly and stuff like that? Well, nobody leaves until, I mean, the host has to leave first, and then everybody else can go. It's very a lot of protocol.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, you showed us the guest list
that night.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Remarkable. And you still have the place settings
for everybody that I kind of wished off the table at the end of the night. Yeah.
And you've got Mr. Sinatra and Mrs. Sinatra.
Sinatra's placemats, yeah.
So, you know, it feels like the Secret Service might have a problem with people coming in the trunk of a car to that event.
I got friendly with the chief of the White House staff. He was a lovely man.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a lovely man.
You so know, you were able to get through.
I mean, you know, you can tell how shy I am. So I, you know, and I used to have fun with President Reagan. I used to tease him about eating his jelly beans before he got, you know.
Jelly bellies.
Jelly bellies, yeah.
Oh, you have a pin that he gave you.
Yes, I have a White House. Real true story is the second year I was there.
This was just the first year.
That was the first year.
All right, so go ahead.
No, I didn't get the pin the first year.
And was that the last time you had to come in the trunk of a car?
Yes, after that, okay. I got to go in the back door.
You got to go in.
I got to go in the back door.
Kept going upright.
I've been in the front door quite recently, but it cost me quite a few dollars. You know? And no free meal.
Right.
I lost my train of thought there. Where were we?
Ronald Reagan gave you a pin.
Yeah, well, the pin I got the second year. When my father was dying in Scotland, and I had to leave and go. And it was right during their visit time. And because I used to say outrageous things to him as he was walking past me or I was walking past him. He was funny. He was really funny.
What did you say to him?
I don't remember, but I'd laugh. You know, I just make him laugh, and I'll say, she's following you. You know, because she'd always be following him everywhere. You know, here she comes, around that corner. I can hear her heels. You know, and he was nice. And so he asked my ex-husband, he said, where I was. And he said, my ex-husband was more polite than me. And he said, sir, she had to go home. Her father is, you know, passing away. And he asked for a phone. He asked if he could call. And he asked for a phone. And the chief of the White House staff made the phone call. Colonel Schmidt was his name. I don't think it's Smith, but it's German. And they called the hospital. And the sister on the ward at the hospital, she came to the room where I was sitting with my father, and she said, "You in Scotland, right? You've got a phone call, and it says it's from the President of the United States of America." You know, like, and they handed me the phone on the cord, and they had passed it to him, and he said, "I just wanted to maybe have a word with your father, and could tell him that I had no green card.
That's fantastic.
I was illegal, and he promised my father that he would look after me." And he said that I was a good girl, and he would take care of me, and my father would be, you know, sir. He called my father sir, which was beautiful. And my dad was, of course, under morphine. He was passing away, and it was a short conversation, but he kept his word. 5 years later, 1985, I got my green card because of that conversation.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best stories I've ever heard.
That's unbelievable.
Well, alien registration cards, when alien, and it's not really green, you know, but the card, I have it, Alien 1, Alien 2, Alien 3, Alien 4. His, President Reagan signed that amnesty in 1985 quickly because he had two friends, and I forget what country, wanted to play polo here. And he signed that. They got alien registration 1 and 2. My husband and I got 3 and 4.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's a great Reagan story.
That's a great Reagan story. That's a good
true
one.
True story, but you want the Sinatra story when he wasn't allowed to come to the...
We do, but we're going to take a quick pause to hear from our primary sponsor, our principal, our presenting sponsor. That was the word I was looking for. The McCallum Theater. Let's hear from them.
At the McCallum Theater, we believe in placing arts at the heart of learning. Since 97, our education department has inspired nearly 1 million students and community members through dynamic performances and immersive arts education programs. From the Palm Desert Choreography Festival to our Open Call Talent Project, we provide powerful platforms for emerging artists. Experience how the arts contribute to personal growth and enlightened citizenship, your entertainment, your theater, the McCallum Theater. Learn more at mccallumtheater.org.
Thank you to the McCallum Theater, our presenting sponsor. We appreciate them. Check them out at mccallumtheater.org. And we are back here with Carol Stephen-Smith just telling amazing stories. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I would hear about those because they would cover it all the time. You know, the Reagans were at Sunnylands for the New Year's. Yeah. And, it, you know, just and that dated back, I think, to when he was governor.
I don't know. Yet.
And did anybody look better in tails than he did? He could wear those things. He was so smart. Yeah, he was.
She loved him so much. She was so caring for him.
No, I don't think there's any doubt they were a doting couple. But, you know, I used to, and it, I still, I pinch myself today when I drive past Sunnylands because, you know, I used to watch that on the news, like, man, that must be a cool New Year's Eve party. I mean, you got Sinatra, you got Reagan.
Bob Hope.
Yeah, all of
my
these.
Three sons, the guy from My Three Sons.
Fred McMurray.
Yeah, he was there. Yeah.
How was Fred McMurray? Because he strikes me as he was a true gentleman.
I mean, they were all the only ones that I ever met that weren't true gentlemen were like Telly Savalas.
What?
He was not a true gentleman.
Was he a little full of himself?
After anything with a skirt on.
Yeah,
followed people around. Yeah.
Wow. Pervy. Kojak.
What's the guy that used to sing with Dolly Parton?
Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers wasn't there. It was a different party, but I did quite a few of those parties back then.
Wait, Kenny Rogers was not a nice man?
He was lovely.
Oh.
He was lovely.
Oh, okay.
He was very nice. He was a gentleman.
Yeah. I know.
I was worried there. I was
there.
Like, oh, no, he's not another
Kenny Rogers.
Not Kenny. You got to know when to hold him, Kenny. Come on.
Not his chicken.
All right, so... Frank was poorly behaved at New Year's.
So I was about 18. I think it was January 83. The Queen of England and Prince Philip were coming for a visit. I forget the January 23rd, 83, coming for a visit. And it was going to be a lunch because they was, you know, it was a big thing for them to come. And the invitation list went out, and Sinatra wasn't on it. And he threw a Sinatra fit. And really threw a Sinatra fit. And this went on for days because Wallace and Mrs. Annenberg did not like him. She did not like him. He was too uncouth for her. And so they said...
They were famously married at the Annenberg estate, he and Barbara.
I know, but she didn't like him.
She didn't like
him. She did not like him at all.
Okay.
So anyway, they... And I didn't know that. And so they said he could come in for a rehearsal, see if he could behave. So all the staff that were going to be involved in that lunch were brought in. And Sinatra was brought in the morning. It was the day before. Brought in. And into the green room. There's a... I don't know if you've been in there. That room where it's like games tables and everything. That room.
I've taken the tour of the house.
Yes. And it's still like it was.
Yeah.
And it's got a bar and tables and the big green drapes. That one.
I have vague memories of the house.
They brought him in, and they said, now, you have to learn. Well, along comes Mrs. Annenberg. You can hear her click, 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 click down the hallways. Not a happy camper, because she didn't want him there. Terrified that he was going to make a fool of himself, you know, or embarrass her.
Embarrass her, yeah.
Yeah. So they said, you're going to rehearse how to approach the Queen of England, you know, and how you have to curtsy, kiss her hand. And then she said to me, you, girl, which I think maybe I had a new name by then, girl. So you, girl.
If she said it was girl, yeah, it
you
was girl.
Yes, I am. Yes, ma'am. And she said, you're short and you're British, so you'll be the queen. So they had me stand there, and Sinatra used to have to come up, came up several times till he got it right, and he'd have to come up and bend down in front of me and kiss my hand and say, nice to meet you, Mom.
Mom.
Sinatra actually kissed your hand more than one again.
Many times. Oh, well, that day.
Which hand?
Yeah. That one.
Do you want to hold that hand?
I have washed it since.
Oh, you have? Never mind.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So he passed the test and he got to go. And he was really, I would giggle and laugh. He was nice to me all the times I ever met him. He was nice to me. He loved children. He loved dogs. You know, and he was a real pet person. And that night he slipped me $200 and thanked me for the lunch for, you know, just for helping him out that day.
He had a reputation for being
very generous.
Tipper, right?
He was a big tipper, yes.
Big tipper, yeah.
There's a famous story about Frank, and it varies on from whom you hear the story, but it did happen in Palm Springs. Some say it was at the Chi-Chi Room. But he came out one night, and they brought his car around, and he said to the kid, he said, what's the biggest tip you ever got? And he goes, $100. So Frank gives the kid $200. Frank gets in his car, and he looks at the guy, and goes, who gave you the $100? And the kid's like, you did, Mr. Sinatra, last Friday. And Tom Dreesen told me that story.
$200 was his thing.
Yeah, $200 was...
I got $200 many times from him. Yeah,
we should invite him on.
That would be great.
I could use $200 so bad. It
doesn't go as far as it used to.
He was very generous. Yeah, he was. Yeah, and a friend of mine, she's still in town. Her name is Rose, and she used to do his manicures and pedicures right up until he died. And she talked about how he was. Do you want this part of it?
Yeah, we want all of it.
He was in the fetal position because he had dementia.
Yeah.
And his little dog, little poodle, was right there cuddling him, wouldn't leave him. They couldn't get the dog away. The dog was so loyal to him. Wow.
Did you have any other experiences with Frank where he might not have been well-behaved as he was at the Annenberg?
Well, I never saw that side of him. Honestly, I didn't. But I did do. I was asked to. I say do. I mean, it was kind of like catering, but overseeing an event then. And he did Natalie Wood's funeral at Sorrentino's restaurant. After the thing in L.A., they all came out here, and he had closed the place down for the night, and he paid for everything. And he wasn't in a really good mood that night. And I saw him, the only time I ever saw him in a not good mood was when they didn't have his wine. And you'd have to go back and find a bottle of that was that same wine. Barbara told us to do this. Steam off the label and put it on a wine and say, Mr. Sinatra? And you say, yep, perfect, pour it. And so, yeah, you'd switch the labels to make sure you got the wine you wanted.
That's awesome.
That was in Sorrentino's.
So how many years did you do the Annenberg New Year's?
Three.
3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all during Reagan's. That would have been his first term.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That is remarkable. Yeah.
My ex-husband used to drive Mrs. Annenberg to the L.A. when she went on charity things, and he used to drive her down. And she was very chatty and very nice. And Wallace Annenberg, the daughter, another story. Yeah, we'll save that for the X-rated version.
Oh, man.
There's no ratings on this. You can tell any story you want.
Well, Wallace Annenberg does like...
That's right. We've already talked about Spotted Dick.
Yeah, there you go. So Wallace Annenberg likes ladies, not men. And she would chase anybody that got in the cottages. They wouldn't let her stay in the house at the Annenberg. She had to stay down in the cottages, way off the ground. So I would unfortunately have to go down to the cottages sometimes, and it would be like, oh, hell, is she there? You know? And we'd, like, literally go in pairs because we didn't trust her.
Wow.
Yeah, she was.
Wow. Like, she was aggressive.
She was very aggressive. I believe that she's in a home now for people that aren't too well.
The overly aggressive.
The overly aggressive.
The older aggressive.
Yeah, I have a lot of stories. A lot of funny stories, you know. Bob Hope stories. Yeah.
Tell us a Bob Hope story.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on.
Very cheap.
Everybody says that.
Very, very cheap.
So you're the first person that I think I've talked to that really has firsthand experience.
True. So we used to, the house up on the hill was owned by Bank of America, not by Bob Hope. It was leased to him for his life and went back to Bank of America when he died. That was never his house. And he and his wife, who was deeply religious, had separate quarters.
Dolores, okay.
Dolores, yeah. Separate quarters. And they do a lot of events up there for different things. And I don't know what the events were, but we'd go up there. And he was very cheap. He wouldn't allow us to, the staff, to wash things in hot water. It was only cold water. It didn't matter what time of the year it was. And he would be holed up in his little apartment, which was up a stair, separate, because they never mixed. They didn't get along, him and her. So he was up in his little room with Gerald Ford. They were best friends. Klutzy Ford, we called him, because he could never come down the stairs.
Did he fall in front of
him? Oh, he would always fall. he always fell. Yeah, fell over his own feet. Anyway, so my ex-husband went up there with a tray of sandwiches and said, Mr. Hope, Mr. Ford, would you like one of these? And Bob Hope said, well, I paid for them, didn't I? Oh, he was so rude. Wow. He was so rude. Yeah.
Wow.
He was not a nice man. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That confirms other stories I've heard.
Yeah, true story. I was in love with Andy Williams.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Moon River and Andy Williams back from the UK.
And was he
and
a
I
nice
wanted,
man?
And I never met him.
Oh.
I wanted to meet him so badly. He was at this party, but they had it outside under that dome. You know that dome? And so they had stations set up of all the bars, you know, and they had that Telly Savalas was at that one, and Glen Campbell and Andy Williams, of course. But every time I'd go around to one of those bars, because I did drink back then, I don't know, but I'd get a drink, and they'd leave a drink for me under the ledge. So I'd go back and go, clock, 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 and go, keep going. Well, by the time I found Andy Williams, or where he was, I followed him from room to room to room to room. Never met him.
You never caught up with him?
Never caught up with him. I was too busy with the vodka tonic.
I met Andy Williams once.
I never did.
I met him at a place called Tony's Pasta Mia.
Oh, Tony's Pasta Mia.
And he
sounds
was
Italian.
It was a little Italian, just a little bit. It was, and a buddy of mine was playing piano. Mike Costley was singing, and Andy and Jack Jones were there.
Oh.
And they both got up and sang.
Oh, wow.
And then Mike Costley invited me to come up and do Summerland.
Uh-huh.
And
with Andy Williams.
No, they're sitting there. So I got up and I'm like,
are you singing to them?
Yeah, they were in the audience. They were just, and I got up and I sang Summerland. I said, this is a great night. I've never had both Jack Jones and Andy Williams open for me.
But that's great.
Jack thought it was hilarious. Andy Williams did not think that was funny.
Oh, no.
No.
No, he didn't.
So,
he was there with his brother.
Up at the Ritz-Carlton, they all used, do you remember, there's a guy and his wife, he's still around in the desert now, they play. And their daughter is a soprano, a opera singer. I forget their name, but they're still around, but they were a duo at the Ritz. And it was Valentine's Day, and I forget what year. And out came, from the restaurant, came Engelbert Humperdinck.
Oh, my goodness.
And he decided to go up and sing with them. You know, people said, come and sing a song, come and sing. And right behind them came Sinatra. He had been dining in there, too. And he got up, too, and sang. You know, he wasn't going to let...
Couldn't let Engelbert sing.
Oh, no, come on.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that. Engelbert thinking he was going to be a big deal that
night? Bobby, that guy...
And then Sinatra walked in.
That guy's still around the desert.
The guy who was playing the piano with that?
Bobby Brown.
Oh, yeah.
That was him. He was there that night. Yeah. Yeah, and his wife. Yeah.
These stories.
I know. It's remarkable.
This is the kind of stuff I've been reading about my whole life.
And now you get
there's
it first.
A lot more.
I met Carol and I have been talking.
Tip of the iceberg.
Well, one day we were at an event and you were just talking, like you just offhandedly mentioned that you had some...
You were talking about somebody at the table said they would love to have met Sinatra, and I was walking past and I said I did. And that's how it happened.
I know what it was. It was the dinner that Father Lincoln and I did together.
Oh,
up
my
at
God, that
Heights.
Was hilarious. That was so much fun.
And that's when I discovered she has all this history.
Wow.
So before we wrap up, and we've got to wrap up, but before we do, what was it like? I mean, there was a lot of protocol and things were much more formal. So those 3 years that you worked that, and you said you were in the middle crowd where you were serving, but you were kind of overseeing those. What was that like? I mean,
I've never followed the crowd. I was never one that would say, you know, stand in the corner, yes or no, sir. So I would just like jump in and help everywhere, doing things I wasn't supposed to do, going places I wasn't supposed to go. I never did get to meet the Queen of England because women were not allowed to serve her, only men. And so I was like behind a door in a little window. I never got to meet her. But it was white gloves everywhere. I mean, you didn't touch anything unless you were wearing gloves, and everything was done so well, so precision, you know, it was flawless.
Now, would you say unbalanced? Because at this point, I mean, those New Year's Eve parties were
amazing.
Well, they were well attended. I mean, the entire government was there.
Yeah.
I mean, you showed, I mean, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of Commerce, the Secretary of the Treasury. They were all there. On balance, did you find those people, I mean, you got to see them sort of
relaxing and enjoying themselves.
Kind of as themselves.
And have a clue who they were. Well, because I'm a Brit, you know?
Right.
And I was there when Fergie came, too.
Oh,
and
wow.
Andrew, really? Fergie and Andrew, I was there. And Ambassador Annenberg couldn't stand her because she was loud, she was obnoxious, but she was a guest of honor. And he sat there and he said loudly, "Will that goddamn woman ever shut up and go to bed?"
And a week later, she's out of the monarchy.
That was it.
Yeah, she was on a beach with somebody sucking her toes.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Another great story.
Carol, this has been a delight.
This has been so fun.
The only thing we didn't touch on is the fact that the desert scene, Desert Sun, may not be in existence anymore.
Right. Let's touch on that right now. Every year they talk about it, and as I said,
it's not funded by the paper.
Right. And it's the one thing that should be. I mean, you can get everything else in this paper out of USA Today.
Yeah.
You and Larry Bohannon, your team that works for the Desert Scene, you have a lot of people.
I work for Winston Giesecke, I adore. He is a great person.
And a great singer, by the way.
Yeah, he just did a thing for he called it his D-list event, but it was fun.
Yeah, I've seen him sing the national anthem at several events.
He sang the national anthem at the Dodger Stadium.
Wow.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So Winston has this team of people like you who do this for free, but you get to go to the event, which is fun, and it's a compensation of some sort. But that is funded by outside donations.
Yes, and generous philanthropists in the desert who have kept it going because they know that they're going to get, you know, people will see the story, they may want to be involved. The Alzheimer's Society, whose readership membership has gone up because people didn't know that they also help caregivers, that kind of stuff. So, but it's going to all end in December if we don't have some people step forward.
You guys write for free. Basically, that funds Winston's salary so that he can be the editor of that section.
Yes. They write things that in this town people want to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we are getting help. We do. I have to be honest. We have somebody really trying to help, and that's Phyllis Eisenberg. Phyllis is doing her best to get the word out to all her friends. You know, she just had a party for 240 of her girlfriends. That was a fun night.
She's amazing.
She is amazing. I adore her. And she's trying her best to get the people she knows, but it's got to happen faster because we can't let it go away.
No, it'll be seasoned before we know it again.
The charities need help, and we can help.
Well, this will be our cause for the rest of the year. And if we can't change things, it can't be changed.
You guys can do it. I have faith in you both.
Thank you.
Carol Stephen-Smith, our guest today on Big Conversations, Little Bar. Randy, thank you so much. Mr. Producer John McMullen over there, thank you. All eight of our camera people who are here today who made this possible.
To film the three of us.
And the McCallum Theater. Remember, visit McCallumTheater.org. You're listening to Big Conversations, Little Bar. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and we're available wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Big Conversations, Little Bar. Recorded on location at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California, and presented by the McCallum Theater, online at mccallumtheater.org. This program is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. All episodes are available from BigConversationsLittleBar.com and most major podcast portals.
Meet your neighbors, fascinating and grand. Each conversation, a wave on the sand. Raise your glass and join the ride, where stories and dreams fully collide. At Big Conversations, Little Bar, brought to you by McCallum, our guiding star. And Randy, tales retold.